A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Daniel sent us this one. He's asking about when people actually make major career changes, especially later in life. The common image is someone in their late 20s realizing their first job out of training isn't for them and pivoting. But what about people in their 30s, late 30s, 40s, beyond? They've got more experience but less career runway ahead. Do those pivots tend to be more conservative? Or do some people go all in? Full retraining, whole new field, starting from scratch, even at that stage. There's a lot to unpack here.
There really is, and the data on this is genuinely surprising. Most people assume career change is a young person's game. Get it out of your system before the mortgage and the kids and the golden handcuffs lock you in. But the numbers tell a completely different story.
Of course they do. The numbers always have opinions.
The numbers have very strong opinions on this one. So let's start with the headline finding. The average age for a major career change in the United States is 39 years old, not 27, not 31, 39. Right at the edge of what most people would consider mid-career, practically staring down 40.
That's not. I tried consulting for 2 years and it wasn't for me. That's someone who probably spent a decade plus building something and then decided to blow it up.
And this comes from a pretty robust longitudinal dataset. The Bureau of Labor Statistics has been tracking this through the National Longitudinal Survey of Youth since 1979. They followed nearly 10,000 people from their teens into their 50s, and what they found was that the average person holds about 12 different jobs between ages 18 and 54. But a job change isn't the same as a career change. The career pivots, the genuine field switches, those cluster much later than people expect.
That's almost a job every 3 years. But that includes the summer gigs and the I worked at a bookstore for 6 months phase, right?
It does, and that's an important distinction. The BLS number includes all jobs held for any duration, which inflates the count. When you filter for what the researchers call occupational transitions, actually switching from one broad occupational category to another, not just changing employers within the same field, the pattern gets much more interesting. Those transitions peak in the mid to late 30s and then have a second, smaller spike in the late 40s to early 50s.
A second spike? So it's not even a single decision point. There's a whole second wave of people doing this later.
The second wave is where things get really counterintuitive. You'd expect those later pivots to be conservative, maybe a slight angle change, same skills, adjacent industry. And some of them are. But a surprising number are full resets. People going back to school, doing new certifications, taking entry-level positions in completely different fields at 45 or 50.
That feels almost irrational on paper. You've got maybe 15, 20 years of earning potential left, and you're going to spend 2 to 4 of those years retraining, and then start at the bottom of a new ladder.
On a pure net present value calculation, it often doesn't make sense, and yet, people do it. There was a fascinating study out of the University of Chicago's Becker Friedman Institute a few years back that looked at exactly this question. They called it occupational reskilling at midlife. And they found that about 28% of workers who made a major career change after age 40 pursued some form of formal retraining. Not online certificate, not a weekend workshop, actual degree programs, multi-year apprenticeships, clinical training.
28%. That's not a fringe. That's nearly a third of later career switchers going all in. What fields are they going into?
The top destinations are actually clustered in a few specific areas. Healthcare is number one by a large margin. Nursing, physical therapy, physician assistant programs, medical coding. Education is second, especially people moving from corporate roles into teaching. And then there's a surprisingly strong current into the skilled trades. Electricians, plumbers, HVAC technicians, people leaving desk jobs to work with their hands in their 40s.
Leaving desk jobs for the trades. That's the opposite of the narrative we grew up with, which was go to college so you don't have to work with your hands.
But I think the deeper question in the prompt is about the psychology of these moves. whether they're conservative or radical, and what drives the difference.
Because the prompt isn't just asking for the stats, it's asking about the character of these pivots. Are people in their 40s making safer bets than people in their 20s, or are some of them actually going bigger?
The answer, from what I've read, is that it bifurcates. You get two distinct populations of later career switchers. One group does exactly what you'd predict. They make what researchers call adjacent pivots. They stay in the same broad industry but shift function. So a marketing director becomes a product manager, or a software engineer moves into technical sales. They're leveraging their accumulated domain knowledge, just applying it differently. Those pivots tend to be smoother, faster, less costly, and they're more common, maybe 60 to 65% of later career changes.
That's the conservative playbook. What about the other 35 to 40%?
That group goes for what the literature calls a transformative pivot, complete field change, often requiring new credentials and usually involving a period of reduced income. And here's the part that surprised me. The people making transformative pivots in their 40s tend to report higher satisfaction post-switch than the adjacent pivot group. Not immediately, the transition period is rough, but 3 to 5 years out, they're significantly happier.
That makes a certain amount of sense. If you're going to blow up your life at 43, you better be doing it for something you actually want. A half measure would just feel like wasted disruption.
There's a concept in career psychology called the sunk cost trap of midlife. The idea that the more you've invested in a career, the harder it is to walk away from, even when you're miserable. And what the data suggests is that people who overcome that trap and do the full reset often experience what one researcher called career authenticity relief. The gap between what they do all day and who they think they are finally closes.
Career authenticity relief. That's a phrase that's doing a lot of work. But I can see it. There's something almost existentially exhausting about performing a professional identity that doesn't fit for 20 years.
That exhaustion is measurable. There was a large-scale survey done by the American Psychological Association in 2023 that looked at career satisfaction by age cohort and career change history. What they found was that people who had never changed careers reported the lowest satisfaction of any group by midlife, significantly lower than people who had changed once, and dramatically lower than people who had changed twice or more. The never-changers were also more likely to report symptoms of burnout, depersonalization, and what the APA rather delicately called professional regret.
Staying put is actually riskier for your well-being than leaving. That's the finding that career advice columns never lead with.
Because it's counterintuitive and it makes people uncomfortable. The standard advice is stability, stability, stability. But the data keeps pointing in the other direction. There's a labor economist at Harvard, Lawrence Katz. He's been tracking this for decades, and he published a paper showing that the wage penalty for career switching has been declining steadily since the 1990s. Used to be that switching fields cost you about 15 to 20% of your earnings, at least temporarily. Now, for many knowledge workers, it's closer to 5 to 8%. And in some high-demand fields, switchers actually get a premium because they bring cross-domain perspective.
Wait, switchers are getting paid more in some cases. That flips the whole model.
It does, and it's a recent enough shift that most career advice hasn't caught up. The premium shows up most clearly in what Katz calls combinatorial roles, positions where you need depth in two different domains. Think a data scientist who used to be a biologist or a product manager who came from journalism. Those people are rare, and they're increasingly valuable because they can translate between worlds that don't normally talk to each other.
The later career switcher isn't necessarily starting from zero. They're bringing something that the 25-year-old straight out of a coding bootcamp doesn't have, which is a whole previous career's worth of mental models and context.
That's the argument for why transformative pivots at 40 can actually work better than conservative pivots. If you do the adjacent thing, you're competing against people who've been in that adjacent lane their whole careers. You're a marketing person doing product management. You're up against career product managers. But if you do something completely different, your previous career becomes a differentiator, not a deficit. You're the only person in the room who understands both the old domain and the new one.
The only former journalist in the product meeting. The only nurse who became a software developer. The only accountant who retrained as a landscape architect.
That last one is not hypothetical. I found a study from the University of Pennsylvania that specifically tracked accountants who left the field in their 40s. The largest destination, surprisingly, wasn't finance. Adjacent. It was design in creative fields. Landscape architecture, interior design, graphic design. People who'd spent 2 decades in spreadsheets and then decided they wanted to make things you can see.
That's a beautiful image, actually. 20 years of deferred aesthetic impulse finally demanding its due.
It really is. And the study found that the accountants-turned-designers reported higher career satisfaction than a control group of career designers. Not because they were better designers, they weren't, especially at first, but because the contrast with their previous work made the new work feel meaningful in a way that people who'd always done design sometimes took for granted.
Contrast is a source of meaning. That's an idea that doesn't get enough attention in career discourse. Everyone talks about finding your passion, following your bliss, as if the feeling exists in a vacuum. But a lot of satisfaction seems to come from the delta. The difference between what you are doing and what you're doing now.
There's actually a name for this in the literature. It's called contrast-enhanced satisfaction, and it's been observed in everything from career changes to relationships to migration patterns. People who move from a cold climate to a warm one report higher weather satisfaction than people who were born in the warm climate, even years after the move. The memory of the cold persists and makes the warmth feel warmer.
The miserable first career isn't wasted time. It's seasoning. It's what makes the second career taste like something.
That's a very corny way of putting it, but yes. And this has real implications for how people should think about career timelines. The standard model is, pick a lane in your 20s, grind for 35 years, retire. But that model was built for an era when people lived to about 70 and spent maybe 10 years in retirement. Now you're looking at a 45-year working life and potentially 30 years of retirement. The math doesn't work the same way.
45 years of working life. That's a long time to do one thing.
It's an absurdly long time. And the data bears this out. The average tenure in a single career path has been shrinking for decades. The Bureau of Labor Statistics did a survey in 2024 that showed the median worker now spends about 4.1 years with a single employer. But more relevant to our question, they also tracked what they call career episodes, continuous periods in the same occupational field. And the median number of distinct career episodes per worker has risen from 1.6 in 1980 to 2.4 today.
2.4 distinct careers per worker. So the average person is now doing this more than twice.
That's the median. For knowledge workers specifically, the number is higher, closer to 2.8. People with advanced degrees actually switch more often than people without them, which is another counterintuitive finding. You'd think more education means more specialization and less flexibility, but it turns out that advanced degrees give you more optionality, not less. They're switching into adjacent fields where their credentials still carry weight.
Let's talk about the timing piece more specifically, because the prompt asked about stages. Are there identifiable patterns in when these switches happen, or is it just a random distribution across the 30s and 40s?
There are very clear patterns, and they cluster around life transitions more than career milestones. The first big cluster is early 30s, roughly 31 to 34. That's often the first reckoning. Where people have been working for 8 to 10 years post-education, they've achieved some level of competence, and they realize that competence doesn't equal satisfaction. They're good at the job, but they don't want to do it for another 30 years.
I've proven I can do this. Now what?
That cluster tends to produce more adjacent pivots than transformative ones. People are still relatively early in their earning arc. They might have young kids. The risk tolerance isn't as high as it is for a 25-year-old, but it's higher than it will be later.
Then the second cluster.
Late 30s to early 40s, 37 to 43. This is the big one. This is where the transformative pivots concentrate. And the trigger is often not dissatisfaction with the work itself, but a broader existential reevaluation. The kids are older, the mortgage is under control, and people start asking what they actually want the second half of their life to look like.
The classic midlife crisis, but channeled productively instead of into a sports car.
The data suggests that the sports car thing is mostly a myth, by the way. The actual midlife crisis behaviors are career change, divorce, and relocation, in that order. And career change is by far the most common. People don't buy Porsches, they go back to school.
That's somehow more unsettling. A Porsche is a phase. A second bachelor's degree is a statement.
It is, and it's a statement more people are making. The National Center for Education Statistics reported that enrollment in degree-granting institutions by students aged 35 and older grew by 23% between 2015 and 2025. That's not people finishing degrees they started young. That's new enrollments, new fields, new starts.
23% growth in older students over a decade. That's a structural shift, not a fad.
It accelerated during the pandemic years and hasn't dropped back to the pre-pandemic trend line. Remote learning made it feasible for people who couldn't quit their jobs and move to a college town. The genie's out of the bottle on that one. Once you've shown a 42-year-old parent that they can earn a credential from a good university without uprooting their family, they're not going to forget it.
The infrastructure for midlife retraining has actually improved. The barriers are lower than they were a generation ago.
And that's feeding into the third cluster, the late 40s to early 50s group. This one's smaller, but growing fast. These are people who've already had a full first career, sometimes a full second one too, and they're making what researchers call encore career moves, often into fields with a social mission. Teaching, nonprofit work, healthcare, public service.
The encore career. That's a term I've seen floating around. Is it actually a distinct phenomenon or just branding for I got bored and wanted to do something meaningful?
It's a real phenomenon with its own dynamics. The Encore Career Institute, which is a research outfit at Stanford, has been tracking this for about 15 years. They find that Encore career switchers are distinct from earlier switchers in a few key ways. First, they're more likely to accept a permanent pay cut in exchange for mission alignment. Second, they're more likely to start their own ventures rather than join existing organizations. And third, they report the highest satisfaction gains of any switcher group, probably because they've had even more time to marinate in the contrast effect you described.
They've got less to lose, in a way. If you're 52 and you've already put away a decent retirement nest egg, the downside of a career bed that doesn't pan out is a lot smaller than it is at 35.
The financial risk of career switching follows an inverted U-shape. It's lowest in your 20s when you have little to lose and lots of time to recover. It peaks in your late 30s and early 40s when you're at maximum financial obligation, mortgage, kids' education, peak earning years. And then it declines again in your 50s as obligations taper off and retirement savings compound.
The risk curve and the actual switching behavior don't match. People are switching most when the financial risk is highest.
Which tells you that the decision isn't primarily financial. It's psychological, it's existential, it's about identity. And that's where a lot of career advice goes wrong. It treats career decisions as optimization problems. Maximize lifetime earnings, minimize transition costs. But people aren't optimizers, they're meaning seekers who occasionally do math.
Meaning seekers who occasionally do math. I want that on a t-shirt.
You'd sell dozens. But the point stands. When researchers ask career switchers why they made the jump, financial considerations consistently rank below autonomy, purpose, and what the surveys call work-life integration. Money is a constraint. It determines what's possible, but it's rarely the driver.
Let's get concrete. If someone's listening to this and they're 38 or 44 or 51 and they're thinking about a pivot, what does the data say about how to do it well? Because follow your heart is not a strategy.
No, it's not. And the research on successful later career pivots points to a few specific practices that separate the ones that work from the ones that crash. The first is what career researchers call identity bridging, finding a way to connect your old professional identity to your new one, even if the fields seem completely unrelated. It's not about transferable skills in the resume sense, it's about narrative coherence. Can you tell a story about why this move makes sense to yourself and to others?
The story matters for getting hired, but it also matters for your own psychology. If you can't explain to yourself why you're doing this, the first rough patch is going to shatter you.
The second practice is what's called exploratory prototyping, and this is where the data gets really actionable. The most successful later career switchers don't just quit and enroll in a program, they test the new field first. They take a night course while still employed. They do freelance projects on weekends. They shadow someone for a few weeks. The average successful switcher spent about 18 months in what researchers call the exploration phase before making the full jump.
18 months of testing before leaping. That's a lot more deliberate than the popular image of the midlife crisis quit.
It dramatically reduces the failure rate. One study out of MIT's Sloan School tracked career switchers over a 10-year period and found that those who did any form of prototyping before switching were about 60% less likely to reverse the switch within 3 years. The prototyping phase serves two functions. It builds real skills and contacts in the new field, but it also stress tests the fantasy. A lot of people who think they want to be chefs discover they don't actually want to work in a kitchen. Better to learn that on a weekend stage than after you've quit your marketing job.
The fantasy stress test. That's probably the most valuable part. Every career looks glamorous from the outside, and every career has a Monday morning version that's mostly emails and cleanup.
The third practice is what I find most interesting. It's called social network bridging. Successful later career switchers tend to maintain relationships from their old field even as they build relationships in the new one. They don't burn the boats. And that matters because a lot of the best opportunities in the new field come from introductions made by people in the old field who know someone who knows someone.
The network isn't a trap, it's a bridge. You're not escaping your old contacts, you're using them as scaffolding.
The data shows that people who maintain cross-field networks after a switch earn about 12% more in their new field than people who sever ties and start fresh. The bridging contacts become a competitive advantage.
That's real money, and it makes intuitive sense. Your old network has no competitors in your new field. They're just people who trust you and want to help. If one of them knows a hiring manager in your target industry, that introduction carries more weight than a cold application ever could.
There's a broader point here that I think gets missed in a lot of career change discourse. The narrative is usually escape from the old, embrace the new, burn the bridges, reinvent yourself, never look back. But the data suggests the most successful transitions are additive, not subtractive. You're not replacing your old self. You're layering a new self on top. You become a compound professional, not a serial one.
I like that. It reframes the whole thing. Instead of, I wasted 10 years in finance, and now I'm starting over in UX design. It's, I'm a UX designer who actually understands how financial institutions think. That's a different value proposition entirely.
It's a value proposition that often commands a premium, as we talked about earlier. The labor market increasingly rewards combinatorial expertise. The person who knows two things is more valuable than the person who knows one thing deeply, in a lot of contexts.
Let me push back on something, though. Everything we've discussed so far applies to knowledge workers. People with college degrees, professional networks, financial cushions. What about people who don't have those advantages? Is the midlife pivot a luxury good?
That's a crucial question, and the answer is complicated. The data does show that later career switching is more common among higher income, higher education workers. The BLS numbers show that workers with a bachelor's degree or higher are about twice as likely to make a voluntary occupational change after age 35 compared to workers with a high school diploma or less.
Twice as likely. So there's a class dimension here that the follow your passion narrative completely ignores.
And it's not just about financial buffer, it's about information, networks, and credential access. If you're working two jobs to make rent, you don't have 18 months to prototype a new career on weekends. You don't have a college alumni network to tap. You might not even know what careers exist or how to get into them.
The midlife pivot, for all its romantic appeal, is in practice a mostly upper-middle-class phenomenon.
It is, with one important exception, the skilled trades. The data on people moving into the trades in midlife cuts across class lines in a way that most other career transitions don't. Apprenticeship programs don't require a bachelor's degree. They pay you while you train. And the barriers to entry are lower in terms of upfront cost, so you do see a more economically diverse population making that particular switch.
The electrician who used to drive a delivery truck. The plumber who spent 15 years in retail.
And those transitions often work out well financially. The median pay for experienced electricians and plumbers is higher than the median pay for many white-collar roles that require a degree. The Bureau of Labor Statistics puts the median annual wage for electricians at around $61,000, and for master electricians it's well above $80,000. That's competitive with a lot of office jobs that come with student debt.
The trades are the one midlife pivot that's actually accessible across the income spectrum. That's an important caveat. To the midlife pivots are for rich people. Critique.
and I think it connects to something broader about how we talk about career change. The media coverage focuses overwhelmingly on the dramatic stories, the lawyer who becomes a yoga instructor, the banker who opens a vineyard. Those are interesting stories, but they're not representative. The most common midlife career changes are actually pretty practical. Healthcare, education, trades, government, fields with clear entry paths and stable demand.
The yoga instructor thing is the career change equivalent of a sports car, isn't it? It's the flashy exception that gets all the attention while most people are quietly doing something sensible.
The sensible choices tend to work out better. The yoga instructor from our earlier example, that's a tough business. The attrition rate for new yoga instructors is something like 80% within 5 years. Whereas the attrition rate for a 40-year-old who retrains as a respiratory therapist is near zero, because the demand is enormous and the pay is solid.
The takeaway for someone considering this is, the boring pivots are the good pivots. The exciting ones are often traps.
Not always, but the data definitely suggests that pivots into established professions with clear credentialing paths and stable labor demand have much higher success rates than pivots into passion industries where supply of workers chronically exceeds demand. The phrase researchers use is occupational labor market tightness. Basically, are employers desperate for workers or are workers desperate for jobs? Pivot into a tight labor market and your odds are good. Pivot into a loose one and you're fighting an uphill battle.
That's almost too obvious, but I suspect people ignore it because the loose labor markets are where the cool jobs are. Nobody dreams of becoming a respiratory therapist, but respiratory therapists have jobs.
They have them at stable hours with benefits and predictable career progression. The unsexy pivot is underrated.
Let's circle back to something the prompt asked about specifically. Whether later career pivots tend to be more conservative? I think our answer is, it depends which group you're looking at. The majority are conservative. Adjacent pivots, same industry, different function. But a significant minority go bigger than younger switchers ever do, precisely because they've accumulated enough financial and psychological resources to take a real swing.
And I'd add that the conservative versus radical question might be missing the point. What looks conservative from the outside? A marketing director becoming a product manager can feel radical from the inside. The experience of change is subjective. The data on satisfaction doesn't correlate strongly with how big the change looks on paper. It correlates with how much autonomy and meaning the person gains.
The metric isn't distance traveled, it's meaning acquired.
Which is a very difficult thing to measure, but it's what actually matters. There's a researcher at Yale, Amy Rozesniewski, who's done incredible work on what she calls job crafting, the idea that people can reshape their existing roles to be more meaningful without changing fields at all. And her finding is that the people who are best at job crafting are often the same people who eventually make big career changes. It's the same impulse, the drive to align work with identity, expressed at different intensities.
Job crafting is the gateway drug to career change.
That's not a bad way to put it. People start by reshaping the role they have. When that stops being enough, they reshape the career. When that stops being enough, they reshape the field. It's a continuum, not a binary.
What's the single most counterintuitive finding from all this research? If you had to pick one thing that would surprise the average person?
I think it's this. The people who change careers later in life are not, on average, less successful in their first careers than the people who stay put. The stereotype is that career changers are failures. They couldn't hack it, so they bailed. But the data consistently shows the opposite. Career changers tend to be high performers who got bored or burned out, not low performers who got pushed out. The decision to leave is usually voluntary and proactive, not reactive.
It's not the bottom third fleeing, it's the top third getting restless.
And that makes sense when you think about it. High performers have more options. They've demonstrated competence, they've built savings, they've accumulated social capital. They can afford to take a risk. The people who are truly trapped are often the middling performers who don't have a strong enough track record to make a leap attractive to a new employer and who don't have enough savings to weather a retraining period.
The real golden handcuffs aren't for the stars. They're for the solid B+ players who are doing fine but not fine enough to have escape velocity.
That's exactly the right metaphor. And it explains why so many transformative pivots happen in the early 40s. That's when high performers in their first career have typically hit a point of financial security where the gravitational pull of the old career weakens enough to escape.
We've covered the who, the when, the why, and the how. Let's land on something practical. If someone's in their late 30s or 40s and they're feeling the pull, what's the one thing the data says they should do tomorrow?
The single highest return action, based on the research, is to have what the literature calls an informational interview with someone who's already in the field they're considering. Not a job interview, not networking in the transactional sense, just a conversation with someone who's doing the thing. The data shows that people who do at least 3 informational interviews before switching have dramatically lower regret rates than people who do none. It's the cheapest, fastest way to stress test the fantasy.
That's doable for almost anyone. You don't need a sabbatical or a degree program or a career coach. You just need to find 3 people and ask them what their actual Monday looks like.
Most people are surprisingly willing to have those conversations. The research on help-seeking behavior shows that people consistently underestimate how willing others are to give advice. The refusal rate for informational interview requests is something like 15%, meaning 85% of people say yes. But most people never ask, because they assume the answer will be no.
The biggest barrier to career change isn't financial or logistical. It's the fear of sending an email.
The fear of sending an email is a surprisingly powerful force in human affairs.
It really is. And now, Hilbert's daily fun fact.
Take it away, Hilbert.
In the early 1500s, some Outer Hebrides islanders measured distance in cow wades, the stretch of shoreline a cow could wade along before needing to swim. One cow wade was roughly 380 modern meters, though the unit varied by island and by cow.
You're right.
I have so many questions about cow selection criteria.
I have questions about the calibration process, but I'm not going to ask them.
This has been My Weird Prompts. Our producer is Hilbert Flumingtop. If you enjoyed this episode, leave us a review wherever you listen. It helps other people find the show.
Until next time.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The host dig in, the host dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too, from half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long-eared host. My weird prompts, until next time, stay curious, keep weird in mind.